Colonel Brett, Reel 5. Can we go on to talk a little bit about mess life next? What was the food like in your mess in India?
Oh, the food was very, very satisfactory. Just as one does at home, one added to the army ration in things of our own liking, things that the mess sergeant really thought about would improve the feeding. And that was the mess eating and so forth. Now, we had a table full of silver. We had an immense amount of silver in my regiment. In fact, so much that we employed one man with nothing else to do but look after the silver, keep it polished, and produce it at the right times, in the right quantities. And that was every guest night. We had a guest night about once a week. Normally, that would be for the friends of the bachelors in the mess. The married officers naturally returned any hospitality they'd had in their own homes. But the single officers with a similar need to return hospitality used to invite their guests to the mess. We hadn't any particular mess customs, not that I can think of at all. We drank the king's health, and on very rare occasions added to that with a toast to the regiment. We were not like the Royal Berkshire Regiment, with whom I remember dining many years ago. After dinner, the tablecloth in front of the guests was cleared and everything pushed into the center of the table where there was no cloth. And now a couple of men at each end of the table, at a signal from the mess sergeant, gave a terrific yank at the tablecloth, which slid beautifully towards them and landed in their arms. It was really a wonderful little sensation to see the cloth disappearing in front of you. But you knew that if you put a finger there, you'd probably upset the entire routine, so you didn't.
And how... You had mess bills every so often then, did you?
We had our mess bills were given to us once a month, yes. That included, of course, not only the extra cost of feeding, but any drinks one had had at any time during the period.
Whilst you were in the army, did you get allowances for anything such as clothing or anything of that kind?
No. Those of us who are married got a lodging allowance. There was no clothing allowance of any sort, nor did we receive, in my time, any free uniform of any sort. Since those days, of course, all that is now provided free. But not then. I remember one colonel of the Life Guards, ex-colonel of the Life Guards, told me it cost his father £1,000 to put him on a horse. That was Colonel Stanley, the son of the Lord Derby of those days. Now that gives you some idea of what it would cost an officer in the old days to receive a commission.
Was it very expensive running your horses in India?
The horse received its ration from army sources, but I had to buy the horse.
How much did they cost?
I'm afraid I can't remember now. It was made by a deduction of so many rupees from my monthly salary. I can't remember now what the amount was. We were very keen on polo, and we tried to get our horses to play polo for polo playing purposes and yet to make them suitable as officers' charters. Well, mine was a very suitable pony that way. It was chosen for me by one of our polo playing officers who went down to the army horse establishment, and it was chosen from there.
How did you entertain yourselves, you and the other officers, apart from your guest nights and your polo playing?
Oh, We played bridge in the evenings. We played tennis. We went in for all the games that the men went in for, and all the things that they went in for. We used to shoot as well as they did, better sometimes. And we visited other people, visited other messes, and they came back and returned us. It was a very gay life on the whole, even up in a frontier place like Rawalpindi. And when I say frontier, Rawalpindi is a long way from the actual frontier, but nevertheless, it was always regarded as a frontier garrison, part of the frontier garrison.
Could you be so gay when there was a shortage of women, of white women in the area?
Oh, yes. The shortage existed, of course, so far as the bachelors were concerned. All the married men had their wives with them, or usually had their wives with them. They were the people who kept parties going on the social side. Ladies were not allowed in the officers' mess, not in our mess. I presume they may have been allowed in the Indian officers' messes, the Indian regimental officers' messes. But that I couldn't tell you. But they always added to the gaiety and social life of the place. They were always at the club, of course. And the club was really the great centre of social life in any of these garrison towns.
Did you have a system of leaving cards?
Yes. Oh, yes. Card leaving was a very formal affair. One had to leave your two cards with every person of consequence. That's to say, every commanding officer and his wife and every mess. And in turn, they invited you to an affair. And if they liked you, they'd ask you again, and you would ask them again. If they didn't like you, you never saw each other again. That was all part of this social business. We were very formal in India. Never called on a house unless you'd left your cards and their cards had been returned to you, so that you knew that you were welcome there. But of course, that was one of these social businesses which meant an awful lot at that time and nothing since.
Did the relative shortage of white women cause any problems at all for the officers in general?
Not as far as I know, no. No.
So it didn't lead to officers using brothels or anything of that kind?
Not as far as I know. That I don't know. Being a married officer, I just couldn't say. One didn't talk about that kind of thing, of course. Whether they did or not, I don't know. I know the men did, because there were your occasional cases of disease, and off went the soldier to hospital and was duly punished in due course.
Was this a big problem for you, this problem of men using the brothels? Did you have to take special measures over it?
I think the medical people took precautions and only licensed certain women when they were sure they were clean, that kind of thing.
You had a regimental brothel, did you?
No. Oh, no. Oh, no, there was no encouragement like that. One would have thought it a necessity, but we certainly didn't have one.
What about homosexuality? Was that
That was a thing one never talked about in those days. Whether there was any of it, I've just got no idea.
Was it an offence against army regulations?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, decidedly.
So no instances came up?
No instances ever came up of that, no.
Can you take me through the daily routine which you'd have on a typical day as an officer in India? What time you would get up and how you'd spend the day?
Well, I got up early and went for a ride with my daughter. My three horses would come round and we would mount and off we would clatter down the road. And having reached the race course, in we would turn. I should have said my third horse was ridden by my governess. We would get onto the race course and start off in sedate fashion. And then my daughter would say something, "Daddy, let's race." And we forthwith had a race improvised there and then round the race course. And from there, back again home in nice time for breakfast. And after breakfast, I would go over to my company office, find out what was doing. That is to say, if it were a normal day when we weren't going to do anything particular, see that everything was in order, take company office, that is to say, see if there were any offenders of any sort, and deal with them. Oh, I remember in that connection, we, being a Welsh regiment, had very similar names. And a tremendous number of the same thing. We were not full of Joneses, but we were, had a lot of Williamses. And I remember one day in particular, when first of all Bandsman Williams was run before me for something or other, then came Drummer Williams, and then Private Williams, and so far all was well. Then came a Lance Corporal Williams, and a Corporal Williams, and I choked them off properly, as I had to do. And then came Sergeant Williams. Now, as a captain, I couldn't deal with the sergeant, so I had to refer him to my CO, who was another Williams. It was a bad, as I went into the commanding officer's room, I said to him, bad day for your family, sir. Then had to explain what I meant. And after that, I would inspect the barrack rooms, see that they were clean and in proper order. Meantime, the troops would be out doing something, probably on the possibly some on the miniature range, practicing their shooting. Others might be on the open range, and so forth. And another lot might be practicing their drill, practicing for guard mounting. We might be finding the guard that day, and they would have to be inspected thoroughly before we dare put them in front of the adjutant. And everyone got through the morning. Had a very full morning, and that was it. One walked onto the ranges to see how the troops there were getting on, and back again. Might have a look in at the stables to see how one's horse was being cared for. And one might have to meet the other company commanders and discuss something of common interest to us all, or the commanding officer might have a conference to call us on all about something or other. And but it's really very hard to recapitulate all and did every day. There were very few days when one wasn't pretty busy doing something all morning. Now, the afternoons were given to games and sports of all kinds. And we really felt very ill-used if we had to do something in the afternoon. We were out of uniform immediately after lunch, very often before. And thereafter we were off duty, excepting for the orderly officer and the captain of the week and any other officer who happened to be on a particular duty.
And so would you say that life for the officer in India was very much easier than it was for the officer in Britain?
No, I would say it's just the same. We just had the same things to do at home as we had there in India.
What about the relationship between the officers and men? Was that just the same as it was in Britain, or were relations closer or not in India?
I would think, if anything, a little closer in India, from the point of view that we all felt ourselves to be abroad. and away from home, and with none of our close relations, amongst the bachelors anyhow, to talk with and to see and so forth. No question of going away on leave. Leave was one of the great problems.
Why was it a problem?
Especially for the other ranks. Well, one didn't get local leave. At home, you could get leave almost every weekend. You could certainly get leave for a weekend at least once a month. You could practically count on that. There was no sort of ration about it. But as long as you didn't miss any of your duties, you could be quite sure of getting away and seeing your relatives about once a month while at home. That couldn't be arranged similarly in India. And not many soldiers ever asked for a weekend leave or anything of that sort. It did occasionally happen. You'd find that a soldier had gone to some town not too far away by railway. For one thing, they hadn't got a vast amount of money, and therefore they couldn't have gone awfully far from the travelling point of view. But if they did happen to have made a friend somewhere, they'd probably go and spend that weekend with him. Not that it was possible to make any friends. So I'm afraid that their troops may have found weekends, the Saturday and the Sunday, extremely dull going.
And so did you officers consciously try to make up for this by having a different kind of relationship with the men?
To some extent there must have been that, yes. Yes. We try to arrange games so as to keep them pretty hard at it as hard as we could the whole way through. Then, very occasionally, one might arrange to take some away on an expedition. I managed once to get a coach load of troops, about 30 of us, I suppose, went off on an expedition to Taxila, which is about halfway between Rawalpindi and Abbottabad, and was a place where Alexander the Great, marching through from Persia, halted for some time, and actually a city was established there on top of an old previous Indian city, and that was followed by a later Indian city, and now you had nothing but the ruins which had been dug over and excavated by archaeologists. Well, there was a very good guide on the spot and a very full brochure, and this I found our troops were most interested in. They followed round and were chatting and talking amongst themselves in complete silence when they got to a spot, and either I or the guide was giving them a talk on the subject. I was principally trying to talk about Alexander the Great and his march across the country and who he was, and explain that side of it to them, and the guide was more concerned with what it was that we were now looking at, whether it was a temple or a house or whatever it was.
How were the men chosen to go on that trip?
I think by lot. As there were about 30 men, they would have asked for volunteers of something like 4 or 5 men from each company. And there'd be no hesitation in getting the volunteers. They wouldn't have been from one company, because one would feel that this was a rare occasion in which one managed to get this coach, get someone to pay for the coach, but we hadn't got the money for that kind of thing, and to take them out on this expedition. We all had our haversack ration with us, and we all sat in a group and had our lunch together when the time came. And I continued to talk, and they continued to listen, I hope, and we all went back very cheerful, and I was told afterwards that it did that little bunch of men good. When they got back, they all talked about what they'd seen to the other men in their companies and platoons, and so the whole thing permeated through the battalion.
Did the men come to you with their problems?
Yes.
What type of things were they? Were they just disciplinary things or family problems or what?
Well, largely, I suppose, family problems. little things happening at home and just wanting a word or two of encouragement. Really, possibly something about a younger brother having got into trouble and what could be done about helping him and so forth. One couldn't do much about it beyond just saying, well, he'll get out of it, you know, and just talk him along like that, trying to get any worry out of his head. That was rather rare, as a matter of fact. I think they were far more inclined to talk amongst themselves of any troubles of that sort than they would coming to an officer. And yet they would far sooner come to an officer than they would to a non-commissioned officer. Because I presume they would feel that the officer is so far away from them socially that they'd be free to talk. Whereas a non-commissioned officer coming from the same background, well, he just wouldn't have the same trust as the officer would have.
Did you ever have any suicides in India?
One case I remember, yes.
How did it come about?
It came about through a man having been charged with stealing stuff from his comrades, which of course is a very serious charge in the army, because as all men live together, there is no means of guarding your stuff from somebody else who might want to pilfer it. Anybody who wants to go pilfering could go pilfering from his comrades quite easily. You only got to wait until there's nobody there and open up the haversack, the kit box, whatever it might be, help himself, and that's that. And there was a case of that. And the man was convicted and sent to prison, and while there he committed suicide. That's the only case I knew of.
How did he kill himself?
Hanging.
And what about psychological problems? Did you have any of that due to the heat or the conditions?
No, the only trouble is what I've already mentioned, a little bit of indiscipline during our time up on the frontier, when they were bored stiff, and how we got past that by running these concert parties and giving them more sports and games and things of that sort.
So you didn't have any cases of the Doolally tap?
No, no.
How did you spend your own leaves in India?
Well, I didn't have many leaves in India. I did have a week at Ambala with a friend of mine in the East Lancashire Regiment, and I did have another fortnight in Delhi with an officer on the Viceroy's staff, but otherwise I didn't take any local leave in India. I did come home to England in 1938, and I was home for 8 months, which was my entitlement at that time. So that out of my 4 years and a couple of months in India, I had 8 months at home, which cuts me down to about 3.5 years of India, which is very short time, really. So don't regard me as an expert on Indian life.
Did you go out on shooting expeditions?
No. No, I didn't. We didn't have any tiger in my country, in the area of around Rawalpindi or Abbottabad, and we didn't have any pig, and therefore no shooting opportunities arose. Of course there were duck shooting, bird shooting, yes, but I never was a shot that way. I had a very good rifle shot, but not with a shotgun.
So, would it be true to say that you didn't really see very much of the countryside?
But true to say that I didn't see anything of the country life, and yet I lived in the country the whole time. You remember, our barracks were on the very edge of the city of Rawalpindi. There was nothing beyond us to the north, nor the east, I should say. North and east, we certainly had the city, but south and west there was nothing. Just the local prairie, which looked just exactly like sandy prairie. It wasn't, but it looked like it. At Abbott Abad, it was more mountainous, very nice little golf course, and I used to play there, and of course I played in Rawalpindi too, but I played more somehow at Abbott Abad than I did in Pindi. But the country, no, I can't say that I really went around the country as one would if one were shooting and hunting like that.
And did you go out on picnics with your family?
Oh, yes, very frequently we'd go on a picnic, try and find a new place each time. Now, we did, of course, go up, I didn't explain this to you, I don't think, we did go up to the Murray Hills during the hot season. They were some 5,000 feet higher than Rawalpindi, and therefore a great deal cooler. And here, one could do a great deal more than you could in the heat of the plains. We walked, we rode, we played games far more intensely, and so forth.